On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Now we're getting acquainted with the policy priorities of first-term Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. His constituents span Green Bay to Marinette. Wimberger is a lawyer and Marine veteran. Do you live in the district he represents? What questions do you have for him, especially amid the pandemic? Email ideas at WPR.org. That's email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. State Senator Wimberger, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, lay out some groundwork for us. What are your top priorities this legislative session?
Well, I'm pretty practical about what I want to accomplish. There's a bridge in the southern end of De Pere. It's called the Southern Bridge. That's going to be critical to economic development in the area. There's some coal piles downtown in Green Bay that blow a bunch of ash or dust all over the neighborhood, and moving that to a different location would help spur some economic development downtown. I think that would be good and increase property values. And then we obviously have some issues with water quality and PFAS up in Marinette that I think are long term, and hope to at least make some take a chunk out of that one.
Okay, so some local issues for sure, but let's look at coal piles first. These coal piles, you know, for years you've been trying to move them from the waterfront. What is their status, and what are the roadblocks?
Downtown, you know, this is just a part of the industrial age and how a city develops. And I don't cast any dispersion. It's just how people lived. And so there are these coal piles right south of the Mason Street Bridge, and it blows dust across the river. Obviously, there's some that goes in the river, but there's some plans there to actually move them to the mouth of the bay, on a location that was formerly owned by the Public Service. And so the people who own that location with the coal piles have agreed to just kind of move operations over there. There's been some preliminary steps so far to purchase the location more towards the mouth of the river, and it's kind of gotten a big giant step forward there. But the property swap that would be envisioned is only going to happen if there's some development on that property to make it kind of an equivalent exchange. But I think there's some progress being made, and hopefully there can be some environmental studies and development done there with help with funding from the state.
Yeah, what do you see as your role as a lawmaker to get these coal piles moved? We're also seeing funding from the federal government via the pandemic. What is your role?
It seems like the county and the city have gotten some money that could be used for that. And I hope they do prioritize things like coal piles. It's an intergenerational issue, and to take care of it now is going to be such a great long-term boon to Green Bay. To ignore it at this point, it's going to take another long period of time before a scenario develops where we're healthy in our budget. We have some extra federal monies that could be used for it. So I think it's time to kind of pounce on things like this and do something that cleans up the area and also makes the place more attractive to development.
Let's look at PFAS. Now, you support a bill that would provide $1 million to fund collecting, storing, and disposing of firefighting foam that's linked to these forever chemicals. How would this effort work?
It's to help out the fire departments, and that's only a very small portion of this PFAS problem, obviously. But you know, PFAS foam has saved thousands of lives, and you don't want to discredit that or discount that, but it causes a collateral problem, which is obviously the PFAS pollution issue. So we advanced technologically to where those things don't need to be used anymore, but we've got to dispose them properly, and it isn't just any landfill that will take it. You've got to bring it to a particular place. So it helps all the fire departments kind of clear out their tanks and put it in a landfill that can take those things.
So last week, DNR Secretary Preston Cole urged lawmakers to increase funding for PFAS cleanup efforts. And at a budget hearing, Cole said our health and the state's hunting heritage are inextricably linked to clean water and soil.
We have to be prepared for folks making some determination either not to show up here, sell their properties, move, close the store. There's too much at stake. And if we have the capacity to remove these chemicals off the landscape as we have before, please trust us to do it again for this chemical.
So please trust us. Too much at stake. The governor's proposed budget includes millions for community assistance and testing programs. Do you support these provisions of the governor's budget?
Well, in a general sense, I don't have a good bead with the DNR's proposal as to what it's going to accomplish in particular, but in a general sense, yeah, I think a lot of study has to be done about where the chemicals are in relation to the Johnson Controls facility and on the farm fields. So it's some funding is necessary. I don't know the details of whether what the DNR is proposing is the precise number needed. I do know that it's an actual cleanup or addressing the issue is going to be beyond what the governor is asking for.
There was that lawsuit by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and under an agreement, the DNR can continue sampling water from industrial and municipal treatment plants for PFAS, but it won't release the results to the public. How do you feel about that?
I don't know yet how I feel about that. It's not nice to be secret about it, but if the effluent in various locations is being disposed of properly, then the issue of what it contains doesn't necessarily need to be pressing in the issue here. But the more pressing things are the application of effluent onto farm fields from wastewater treatment plants, and that's the real big one, because it drains off into streams and rivers and obviously contaminates water wells. So it's when it becomes an issue that gets put into a public waterway in one way or the other. So I'm not sure what exactly needs to be made public or not. I'm sure eventually, if anything the DNR does, is going to be made public.
Okay, so you're not quite sure about how the WMC should be able to block or not block the DNR from testing for PFAS. What do you make of the PFAS rulemaking process? Through the DNR, it intends to test for more than 30 PFAS compounds. Should the DNR be able to expand its scope?
Well, the DNR generally has ability to see whatever's going on there and expand the scope as far as what they test for. I don't think they're really limited on what they test the particular samples for. It's the access into private locations that I think would be the more constitutional issue. But once they take a sample, then when they take that sample to their lab and what they test it for, I don't think they're obstructed from testing whatever they want.
We're talking about politics with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. You can email your comments, your thoughts, and issues that are at the forefront to you. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's focus now on the pandemic and schools. Your first bill this year would require school boards to vote every 2 weeks before closing schools to in-person instruction. Closures would need a two-thirds majority vote. Why do you support these measures?
It's important to get kids back into school. There's some falling behind with the schools, and I think a two-week review is a reasonable request that there be a vote every 2 weeks. Now you don't have to necessarily send your kid into in-person, but at least a hybrid could be an option there. So I think the concept of the low degree of risk relative to children versus older people that there can be some accommodations made.
Green Bay Public Schools in your neck of the woods started reopening last month. Do you agree with how the district is handling the pandemic?
I think they're a little slow on the draw there, but that's just a personal preference. I'm glad that the school board here is moving forward.
What do you mean slow on the draw?
I think the data had shown earlier on that it was reasonably safe for children to come back to school, and there could be accommodations made with some virtual things for people who weren't comfortable sending their children to school. But there were a lot of people, thousands that were interested in having their children come back to school.
You know, school boards, they have elected officials. What do you say to school boards who see your legislation as a form of limiting local control over their day-to-day operations?
Sure. Well, the any city is a corporate figment to begin with that's granted by a state statute. So although I definitely prefer to have more local control, there are times when the state, who is the grantor of the authority for the city to even exist, can change things. And it's pretty typical.
We're talking with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. He's with us to discuss his priorities in his first term in the legislature. What issues are on your mind? Lawmakers and the pandemic, what to do about forever chemicals, PFAS, closer to home in Green Bay as we've been talking about the coal piles. Be part of the State Cap. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in a minute with Senator Wimberger here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. He's in his first term in the State Senate, and this is his first time holding elected office. He's an attorney, a Marine veteran, and originally from De Pere. Do you live in Green Bay, Marinette, or another community that Senator Wimberger represents? What questions do you have for him? Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And Wimberger is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's look at vaccine rollout. All Wisconsin residents over 16, age 16, are now eligible to receive COVID vaccines. How is the vaccine rollout going in the communities you represent in your district?
Well, I think up north you had to wait a little bit, but until recent, I think on the whole, everything is pretty well oiled and running pretty well. There's even vaccine clinic opened up in the Lambeau Field atrium. So I don't think the delay is all that long, really, a day or two.
So you're pleased overall with what you're seeing in this district as vaccines are made accessible to your residents?
I do. There's clinics and small clinics throughout the northern part of Wisconsin. And, you know, it took a while to get that many vaccines into the areas because it's a new thing. Nowadays in the last few weeks here, it's been okay.
You know, public health authorities say the vaccines are safe and it's crucial to reach herd immunity. What do you tell people who feel hesitant?
There are people actually that come into the Senate hearings that have had adverse effects by vaccines. My position on all that is if I personally get the vaccine, I'm in control of my own destiny. And if you get the vaccine, you're in control of your own destiny. And if the vaccine works, then it kind of isn't your business to tell other people if they do or do not get the vaccine. So because how can their behavior affect you if you have the vaccine? You're immune even if the other person gets it. So I like the idea of just live and let live type of an attitude there. I know people are worried about vaccines. There are people who have adverse effects from vaccines. And if you don't feel comfortable, you don't feel comfortable. But it seems on the whole safe, and I'll be getting mine. I wasn't eligible for a while here.
All right, so live and let live. No requirements, though, on getting a COVID vaccine in your mind.
Right, and there's actually a bill through the Senate that I am in favor of that prohibited employers from requiring a vaccine as well. It's just too new of a vaccine, and I understand people's worry.
When you talk with employers, what are they telling you on this?
I don't think employers really have a problem. There's the limited liability that we passed, and people encourage it. Employers encourage it, but if you walk into a store and you realize that people may or may not have the vaccine, and you do, and that makes you worried, well, there has to be an accommodation other than having the government tell people what to do.
What about, say, American Family Field, a giant stadium full of fans? Would you want the assurance that those fans are vaccinated or not?
The whole concept here with the mandates to do one thing or another is actually the imposition on you for something that you may not be able to control. So in the circumstance related to the virus, it was related to system overload in a health system unable to cope with an influx of patients. I think we're probably past that. In fact, I don't know how we're not past that. That if there was an outbreak, I think our health system would be able to handle it. So the fact of you contracting a virus doesn't give you justification to use the government to tell people what to do. We don't do it with the flu. We don't do it with anything, with any type of virus or disease. If there's a vaccine out there and you can control your own behavior by not going to the stadium, for instance, then and you won't get the virus. And then if you just happen to get the virus by some circumstance and medical care is available to you, then I think that overarching government justification to impose restrictions isn't there.
We're talking politics with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. You can email your questions for the first term state senator, email ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So continuing on this pandemic thread, mask wearing, the state Supreme Court recently ruled against the governor's repeated use of emergency powers to order a statewide mask mandate. What is your reaction to their decision?
It's the legally correct analysis. The governor has 60 days to do an emergency order like this, and it's the way it has to be, because to declare new emergencies based on some sort of different variation in circumstances would effectively eliminate the legislature. And so it's important that the governor work with the legislature to continue on with any sort of measures, because an emergency is only for a brief period of time where a system might collapse. After there's some assessment, it's not really an emergency. It's actually a long-term problem. And we deal with long-term problems through a deliberative process in the legislature and in the executive.
But if pandemics only lasted 60 days, I think we'd all be pretty ecstatic. I mean, do you really think the legislature would extend an emergency order when GOP lawmakers have fought public health pursuits in court at every turn?
Well, that's kind of a separate issue. But yeah, there's a problem with getting people to agree with you, and that's why we have debate. But the 60-day limit is not because a pandemic will only last 60 days. That's ridiculous to think that. It's because after you can stabilize a situation, then it's no longer an emergency. An emergency is something that is very unstable and needs an immediate reaction. And that's what the 60-day period is for. Anything further than that is a long-term problem, and the pandemic is a long-term problem.
So should Republicans approve a statewide mask order, whether that's through legislation or the rulemaking process?
I don't think at this point that it's necessary. There's the businesses are comfortable doing the masks in their businesses, and they can handle that. You can avoid going to stores. You can get your vaccine now. So it's a mandate from the state, I don't think, is necessary.
Let's look at the nonpartisan analysis. Overturning the governor's emergency order could cause the state to lose about $50 million in monthly federal food aid. And state health officials now say that could start happening next month. Should the state take action to maintain this assistance?
if there can be an emergency order crafted that triggers that food aid, I think it should be done. If it's limited in the scope of only doing that, I know that the Senate tried to do that previously, and I think it's something that needs to happen. However, simultaneously, I don't know if the federal government can actually tie food aid to declaration of a emergency, a formal, you know, document of some type. I don't think that there can be a tie to there.
So the legislature wants more control of the federal aid that is coming into Wisconsin due to the pandemic. The legislature has a very poor track record of acting nimbly and finding consensus in the pandemic. If you give the legislature control of funding, would that slow aid to residents who need it fast?
Well, I don't know if you can say it's going to be delivered fast, regardless of who distributes it. I know it took several months for Governor Evers to distribute the last round of it. And just having unilateral control over the purse is typically not something the governor does. Usually the purse is in the control of the legislature, and that's how you do a check and balance. Now, Governor Evers has carte blanche authority over that money. So if things aren't exactly the way he wants them, in a way that solves the problem, then we definitely know who's to blame for it, because there's no input from the legislature.
State Senator Wimberger, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Eric Wimberger is a Republican state senator from Green Bay. He represents residents from Green Bay to Marinette. Voters first elected him to the Senate last year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.